Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, welcome. Well, if you've ever been dumped, divorced, widowed, or suffered the stigma that sometimes goes with being a single person, we have two really great guests to help you today. Coming up at 12:30, Christine Arelo shares her story. She and her lover of 15 years are on their way to their engagement party when he turns to her and rather unceremoniously dumped her. Oh, and by the way, he said, in addition to not loving you anymore, I've been cheating on you for the past 6 months. Well, that sparred Arelo to it was a huge wake-up call for her, and it inspired her to be a catalyst for women everywhere, daring them to be and love and live their real selves. But first, I'm very pleased to have relationship expert Dr. Judith Sills with us. Her new book says it all. I'll give you the title of it. It's called Getting Naked Again: Dating, Romance, Sex, and Love When You've Been Divorced, Widowed, Dumped, or Distracted. Dr. Sills is a clinical psychologist, a 3-year National Science Foundation fellow, and the author of 5 other psychology books, including Excess Baggage, A Fine Romance, and The Comfort Trap. She's regularly quoted and featured in national media and is joining us today to talk about getting naked again. Dr. Judith Sills, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
What a good book this is. I was telling
you. And thanks for that, too.
And a book that I'm thinking many people can benefit from. But tell us why you wrote it, who you wrote it for.
Well, I saw so clearly, you know, I'm just all about the certain dilemmas of love and dilemmas of the heart. That's what I've been working with for the last, let's say, 30 years. But I saw so clearly in my patients, in my friends, and then as I began to interview all around the country, the dilemma of this particular woman. She is a woman who was in a relationship, probably was a marriage, not necessarily, and she kind of thought her life was sort of set. And she finds herself now alone. Maybe her kids don't need her so much anymore. Maybe she's alone now because she wrenched herself out of a bad relationship. Maybe she got dumped. She got left for someone else. Maybe through death. But she finds herself alone unexpectedly. And the question is, now what? Because it's a long life. And she often doesn't have a lot of single girlfriends the way she did when she was 20, where we all put our heads together and helped each other through it.
Right, right.
It's just a lot of questions. How am I going to go about being single? Is it over for me? I want a little romance in my life. I want companionship. Maybe I want to remarry, or maybe I just want to have sex again before I die, or maybe I don't even know what I want.
Right.
But what I do want to know is, how do I go about getting started? And how do I present myself? What do people talk about on dates these days? Who pays? How do I become single and still active in the social world? That was a problem I saw everywhere, and I wanted to make it easier.
Well, this book certainly does. And let's look at a couple of those things, because for anyone who has been in a relationship for a long time, things have changed.
Well, they have and they haven't.
Mm-hmm.
What has not changed is a kiss is still a kiss.
Right, right.
There is still the issue that people need to make a connection, that they need to get past a certain amount of anxiety, that we're all perhaps not our best on the first, second, and third date. That hasn't changed. What has changed is you are going back into that romantic world with an injury. You've had a loss. You had one head on the other pillow for quite a while, and now that pillow's empty, and seeing another head there seems a little strange.
Mm-hmm.
And you have many more options at this point in life than you had when you were 20, but it takes a while to appreciate how many more options you have.
Yeah.
That's very different.
Now, some people are afraid to even get back in the game. What's the most common excuse you hear for not getting back in the game after a long-term relationship?
It's not that some people are afraid. We all have a little bit of apprehension or a lot of apprehension. And we say to ourselves, this is in order not to face something anxious, we say, ugh, there are no good men. It's not worth bothering with. They're all so damaged. They only want younger women. They'd never look at me. They just want someone who's 25. You know how shallow they are. Or, I don't like old men. They have pot bellies. I'm just not, because women are just as hypercritical about age.
Oh, of course. And we're putting the problem
so rigid.
Out there.
I just can't even find anyone attractive. Only the young boys have any sizzle. Or, I'm just too tired. I can't do it. I'm too fat. I'm too old. I hear 35-year-olds say, I'm too old. I'm too fat. If you want to not do something because you're apprehensive, you have a lot of negative talk about how there's no reward out there, so why bother? But the fact is, there's tons of rewards out there, but not unless you walk a little bit over the hot coals of a little discomfort.
Okay, you say in chapter 2, you say you bleed or you thaw. What do you mean by that?
Well, after the injury of a divorce, you may be, or of widowhood, let's say, you may be bleeding, rage, fury. You were injured. You were dumped. You were duped. Or you may have come from a long marriage in which you froze in the endurance of the relationship. You shut down sexually. You shut down emotionally. Just kind of went through the motions. To go back into the romantic world, one needs to open up if you're frozen and stem the bleeding and stop gushing rage on every new man that crosses your path. If you're bleeding, come back to an emotional balance point.
Okay, sounds good. I've got a ton of questions I want to ask you. Let's take a quick break first. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and we'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Coming March 9th on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, Dr. Judith Orloff discusses the power of emotional freedom. Imagine yourself running late and stuck in a traffic jam. Instead of getting tense and irritated, you remain peaceful and calm. Or imagine your boss demanding that it's his way or the highway. Instead of feeling intimidated or angry, you feel compassion. A board-certified psychiatrist, Dr. Orloff helps thousands of people transform negative emotions by synthesizing traditional medicine with intuition, energy, and spirituality. Her work has been featured in O Magazine, Self, Cosmo, and she's been a regular on The Today Show, CBS Early Show, and CNN. Tune in Monday, March 9th at noon for The Power of Emotional Freedom on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for guest schedule.
The new mainstream of talk radio. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My special guest this half hour is Dr. Judith Silves, clinical psychologist and author of numerous psychology books. The one we're talking about today is called Getting Naked Again. And it says Getting Naked, Dating, Romance, Sex, and Love When You've Been Dumped, Divorced, Widowed, or Distracted. And I wanted to talk about a thing that I've noticed with several friends, and happened to me myself too when I got divorced. Friends see you in one light as a married person or a person in a committed relationship. Suddenly you're single. What happens? Some people see you then as a threat, even if their mate is the last person on earth you would consider looking at.
Yes. You know, I actually think very little is written about this, which is why I put a whole chapter in called Other Women and Their Husbands. And the fact is that single and married are much more than just a legal status. Mm. They're how other people view you in the world. When you are a single woman, in our very much Noah's Ark coupled society, you throw things off balance. So some women, some friends are fantastic, keep you included. It says, you know, they keep their arms wrapped around you socially. But very often, your couple's world moves away from you. And they do it because you no longer qualify. You know, we all go to the club on Saturday nights, and you're sitting at the table, and it's a dance. We all go to the movies, and we no longer include you because it's something we did with you and your mate. Partly we no longer include you because some husbands see you as a target of opportunity. Some wives feel that change of energy and they feel uneasy about it. You know, your girlfriend's husband always helped you with your taxes. This year he's helping you with your taxes and it's a little bit different because he's not helping you and your mate.
Right, right.
It just feels bit uncomfortable. It's the two of you alone for several hours.
Yeah.
The thought crosses the mind. Now, how do you handle that as a single woman? And it is really on you, unfortunately, it's on you to support and reassure your married girlfriends, and you don't even get to do that by saying to them, I wouldn't even look at this guy.
Right.
He's a baked potato. You can't say that.
Right.
You can't say that truth, even if it is the truth. And you are very wise to not share with your married girlfriend that, in fact, her husband did touch your foot under the table or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You simply discreetly make sure that this time, if he's doing your taxes, you go to his house and she's there. This time, anytime you have a private telephone conversation, you always mention to her, oh, George and I were just talking today about my taxes. There's nothing secretive. Now, it may well be that friends include you and you don't want to be part of it. That happens also because you feel like a fifth wheel.
Mm.
Or as one woman said to me, I used to hold my guy's hand in the movies, and I don't want to go with these two other couples and have no hand to hold.
Right.
I don't feel good about that. So it's not just that our married friends pull away from us. We pull away from them. And the fact is, part of turning single might be to maintain all your married relationships, but you have to build new ones too. Because you need relationships in the single social world where your married friends probably do not venture.
Okay. Well, let's look at another aspect of suddenly becoming single, and that's how do you deal with your kids? And you have a great quote in the book by Nora Ephron. She's one of my favorite screenwriters. And she says, if I gave my children the choice between me blissfully happy in Hawaii or suicidal in the next room, they would go for the next room every time. So let's talk about that.
And one of the three great fantasies of being single is my children only want me to be happy. When the reality is my children do only want me to be happy as long as I am mom first, second, and third. And by definition, mom is not newly in a miniskirt, 20 pounds lighter because of her post-divorce diet, more blonde, and out on a date. That's somebody else. That's not mom.
Right, right.
So our children are uneasy with being confronted with mom's romantic life. And that could be a child who's 35.
Mm.
We're uneasy with it. So it's best to, I think I describe this as block and tackle. First, put a privacy block up. Have your romantic life, your dating forays, your experiences, but don't turn your daughter into your girlfriend about that. She doesn't need to hear about that. She doesn't want to hear about that.
Yeah.
Have a girlfriend you tell about that.
Okay, well, I think that's good advice, because I wouldn't want to hear my parents talk about that.
Even if you're very close to them.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
At the same time, it's not secretive. You don't make a secret of dating. You simply say, that's really my private world, and I'll introduce you when it's important. Then when it's important, take a breath and just downplay it. Ralph's coming to dinner. Not, this is what I hope, this is where he came from, this is what we've been doing. Just, this is a person in my life, I date him sometimes. And then let everybody meet without much coaching, without much preliminary, and try very hard, this is hard, to not have so many postmortems. So what'd you think?
Mm.
Because the fact is you don't want people to put into words what they thought. Things that are articulated tend to stick. You want to give someone a chance to think what they thought and then revise their thinking over time, which often happens.
Okay. That makes perfect sense.
Well, we have such a rush in the world today to decisions, judgments, putting everything in writing because of email and so on. Time, silence, privacy, an opportunity to make plenty of mistakes and realize no one has to date perfectly works to make people get better at it.
One of the things that I think is, I think it's critical. I don't know how you feel on this, but let's talk about it. I think it's critical to get to re-know yourself before you start dating again. And I know I was not ready when I divorced to even look at another man for a while. Because I felt I wanted to get to reconnect with myself, and I've heard several friends say the same thing. What's your view on that?
The first half of getting naked again is called interpersonal evolution, and it is all about going from being a married person in your identity, part of a we, to being a single person, an I. And how we evolve into really understanding what is it I want, what is it that I need, as opposed to, okay, I need to find the right guy, and now I've learned from my experience, so I've made a list. It's none of the things that my ex was. I don't want any of those things that drove me crazy. However, that said, I will also say some people discover themselves before they get involved in dating and romance. And some people get involved in dating and romance and so discover themselves. There is no one right way. There's no. I write a whole chapter about readiness and how to know when you're ready, but it's not an on and off switch. Some people, one woman, you know, I interviewed all around the country for this book, men and women, and I talked to them about how they resumed romantic life, what they learned from it, because there's nothing like hearing it straight from people living it. One woman said to me, well, I threw him out at around 2 in the afternoon, then I threw out everything he owned and the sheets and towels, and I was at a bar that afternoon, that night, meeting a new guy. And another woman might say to me, it was 2 years before I could even make eye contact with a man.
Wow, yeah.
These are, and now we're talking about grown-ups, adults. You've been in a long-term relationship. You are who you are. Finding out your pace and not worrying about the right pace.
Yeah, to follow your intuition then.
And letting yourself be who you are. Just letting yourself. And that's a lot to do with, when you're 20, you're looking for the right guy. He has to be a certain religion. It's who your family envisions. He has to be a certain race. He has to be a certain age. You're looking for a certain income level and a certain educational level. You have a checklist. But now, you might go back into the romantic world with that same checklist, because we all kind of first dial the clock back to when we're 20. But quickly you understand you don't need those things anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe you're economically fine and you don't need somebody to take care of you financially. You're not having kids with this person. And you don't have to please your mother anymore. This round is for you, which is the great thing about it. And that does take a little time to understand what might be satisfying to you. And you'll take a few missteps.
Right, right. Now, they say, many people say that meeting the right someone is just a numbers game, but you say it's much more than that.
Oh, it's so funny that you say that, because actually I'm working with a man right now who says it's a numbers game, it's marketing, and you go out there and you write the best email, you write the best clever email, and then you send it to 27 attractive people on 3 websites, and then you get a yield. And in reality, there's some truth to that. If you're looking for the, there's some truth to that, but the absence of emotionality of it, the absence of open-heartedness of it, the constant, okay, I dated 31 people before I found someone I'd go on a fourth date with, and I rejected the first 31 because this one smoked, and that one was chubby, and this one didn't work out, and I hated the car, is so, it's that very negative shopping mentality.
Yes.
And what you get when you have a negative shopping mentality is a lot of negative shopping. There's no evidence that you bring more joy into your life or that you're wiser that way. There's no reason to believe that. It's just a way of trying to feel control over something that is purely experiential. So I would say when you start out with that, sure you want to write a positive email on the internet. But, and you sure you have to know that's going to take a lot of time and attention and make you tired. At the same time, if you have that shopping mentality, you're going to get a negative view about men, and the men who are doing that are going to get a negative view about you and find out that you were graying at the roots or too chubby or had too many crow's feet and go, no, no, no. It's abrasive. The fact is there's hardly anyone who crosses your path that doesn't have something to teach you, something to enjoy from him, some advice he might have to give you, something he knows that you don't know yet, some place he might take you that you wouldn't ordinarily have been. It makes for a rich emotional and social life if you can develop that attitude, and that takes time. And that means meeting people doesn't hurt you so much.
Yes, it takes a lot of the pressure off there. Now, I wanted to talk quickly about transitional relationships, because time's flying by here. But there's a great line in When Harry Met Sally, when Sally breaks down hysterically and her boyfriend, longtime boyfriend's left her for another woman, and then he ends up marrying her and she screams, but he was supposed to be her transitional person.
Uh-huh.
Let's talk a little bit. You say there are 4 classic transitional relationships.
Well, I also say very clearly, that's not to say that we don't marry this person.
Right.
Transitional basically means if you get back into dating and romance, after the first emails and the first kisses and the first false starts or whatever, eventually you're going to get a boyfriend. You're going to get a boyfriend. And you're going to, in the beginning, you're going to kind of go, oh, my God, look how old I am. I have a boyfriend. Oh, my God, I'm 40 with a boyfriend. I thought you had a boyfriend when you were 16. I'm 70 with a boyfriend. It's bizarre.
Hey, my grandmother was in her 70s.
Exactly. I'm 70. I have a boyfriend. I'm in the home. I have a boyfriend. I plan to have a boyfriend when they're going to carry me out of the retirement home. I plan to be winking at somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a little bit, you're going to get a boyfriend. And all I was saying in this chapter was, let me predict for you. There's 4 typical kinds of patterns to these relationships. The boyfriend will likely be the antithesis guy, the guy whose major trait is the opposite of the relationship you came from. So you were with the super, you were married for a long time to that kind of angry, sarcastic guy. And the boyfriend is so calm, you couldn't get a hostile word out of him. Or you were married to an intellectual that couldn't fix anything, and the next person comes into your house and knows immediately what to do about the furnace. We seek out like an unscratched itch. Then you have the functional guy. He's the boyfriend that fits into the space in your life that was left by the relationship. The person that goes to the party with you. The person that sits next to you at Thanksgiving dinner and opens the wine. He fits into the role. You put put him in the husband role, whatever is actually in the emotional connection between you. And the caretaking guy, whose function in particular is he gets very involved. He starts parenting your kids. He talks to the divorce lawyer. He figures out your real estate contract if you're selling that. He gets very involved in taking care of you. And often women are the caretakers of the recently divorcing guy, because these are very needy times in life. And the last one is a sexual mentor, because we tend to be shut down sexually coming out of a long relationship, especially a relationship which was a, well, I'll just say we tend to be shut down sexually coming out of a long relationship, and we don't just immediately turn back on. And a sexual mentor is someone who helps us become more physically comfortable and responsive. Now, we could at any given time marry one of these people. That happens. But whether you marry or not, this is typically the pattern of the next relationship.
Okay, that sounds, all of the information in this book is really great for someone who's been in a long-term relationship. Actually, it's good for people who haven't even. I want to just ask you what you'd like to leave our listeners with today.
One thought, and that is this. It is a very long life, and it is very important for you to keep your juices flowing and our juices flow in the presence of romance, love, sex, companionship, flirting. That is a big piece of life. And it's out there. There's a tissue wall of anxiety between you and it. Take a few risks, break through, and keep that in your life. Keep yourself in the middle of life. Don't retire to the emotional sidelines just because you've been hurt. There's too much action outside the front door.
Great advice. And would you like to give out your website, please, so people can find out more about you?
www.judithsills.com.
Judith Sills, thank you so much for being with us. I know you're on the Today Show tomorrow. Will we be able to see you tomorrow?
I am talking tomorrow, but I'm not talking about getting naked again, actually. I'm actually talking about multi-generational families.
Oh, there you go. That's another
how we all live together, which is, after all, the goal. That we stay together, that we love each other, and that we tolerate the fact that we drive each other crazy. That's a good definition of dating, don't you think?
I think so, and I thank you for being with us today.
Bye-bye.
And that was Dr. Judith Sills, her book, Getting Naked Again, Dating, Romance, Sex, and Love When You've Been Divorced, Widowed, Dumped, or Distracted. Please stay with us. We'll be right back with our next guest. We'll be talking about Choosing Me Before We, Every Woman's Guide to Life and Love with Christine Arillo. Thank you. Hey, this is Vicky St. Clair with Conversations Live. Have you checked out Book Talk lately? Every week, Conversations Live produces a 2 to 4 minute book review via podcast. You can listen to our book reviews anytime at KKNW. Just log on to 1150kknw.com. or download them onto any MP3 player at your convenience. We review an eclectic range of books, from humorous vignettes to essays on life and living, to debut novels and novels that have been around for a while that you might not have heard about. Conversations Live regular reviewer Cynthia Baxter is a voracious reader, and we're excited to bring you a new Book Talk podcast every week. Check out Book Talk at 1150kknw.com. That's Book Talk at 1150kknw.com.
Radio for your body, mind, and spirit. Alternative Talk, 1150.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My next guest is Christine Arillo. I totally butchered her name the first time. Christine Arillo. Her book is called Choosing Me Before We, Every Woman's Guide to Life and Love. And Christine Arillo is an inspirational catalyst. For 13 years, she created powerful marketing images for big brands like Gap, Frito-Lay, and Visa. And she traded all of that in to inspire women to break free from their limited self-images. She's an author, speaker, and professional coach, and challenges women around the world to live and love their most authentic selves. Her new book is, as I said, Choosing Me Before We. So I'd like to welcome Christine to the show.
Hi, Vicki. It's great to be here.
And good to have you. And I'd like to start off with your journey and what prompted all of this. Like many of us, your journey began with a big wake-up call. You're on your way to your engagement party. And what happened?
Well, I got ran over by the proverbial Mack truck, or in other words, my fiancé, who was driving the car, pulled over the car, stopped, looked at me and said, I don't love you anymore, I don't want to marry you, and oh, by the way, I've been cheating on you for the last 6 months. 2 miles from my mother's house. Hmm. So it was quite a shocker, or a party kill, I would say. And I wish I could tell you that I looked at him and I said, you know, you're a jerk, and punched his lights out and walked out of the car. Unfortunately, that's not what I did. I actually looked at him and I said, you know, that's great. We have a party to go to. There's 40 people waiting for us. We'll fix this later. And I was so used to fixing everything, I just figured, you know, I was a smart, determined woman. I would just fix this later. And 2 weeks later, with lots of begging and pleading for him to come back, I realized that the big hole I was feeling in my heart wasn't because he wasn't there. It was because I wasn't there.
Mm. Now, here's the thing. I mean, you were together 15 years. You could have crumbled. You could have curled up into a little ball and sucked your thumb. You could have popped a Prozac or Xanax, but you didn't. What did you do? Obviously, there was some initial grieving there.
Well, I actually sought the advice of a very wise woman, 40 years my senior, and she said, sweetie, you can follow this guy around for the next 4 years and he will continue breaking your heart, or you can leave and your life will open up into possibilities that you could never imagine. So I packed up my bags, I moved into my girlfriend's studio apartment, shared half a bed, half a closet, and in that moment made a promise to myself that I would never again settle for less than my heart and soul wanted.
So how long did it take you, Christine? You're in a 15-year relationship. How long did it take you before you started feeling like you were healing? Because, you know, for people who've been through that, you said this in the book, the pain was so intense, you really believed you were going to die. And, you know, I'm sure many of us have felt that same way.
Yeah, well, I often say that it took me a year to forgive him. It took me 5 to forgive myself. Mm. For putting myself in that situation and settling and believing truthfully that somebody completed me, that I needed this person in order to survive. And here I was on the outside, this very smart marketing executive, MBA student, you know, had it all, the mini McMansion, the big ring, the big car. And on the inside, I was broken. And I never knew that I actually had emotional things I had to heal, because I grew up in the south side of Chicago. You don't heal emotions. You stuff them in the closet and deal with them maybe later.
Right. As do many, many people. So let's talk about the title of the book, Choosing Me Before We. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think a lot of women, we are always focused on the 10 easy steps to find a guy, or we're looking for Mr. Right or Prince Charming. And the problem is we're focused on the wrong pronoun, because great relationships start with me. Not with he, not with she, not with we. And that's really the premise of Choosing Me Before We, and it's how the book is written, is that you have to really know yourself, love yourself, trust yourself, honor yourself, and really be honest with yourself in order to attract a great he or she and create a great we.
So how do you begin? For many women, they're raised, I mean, this is a very common topic now, you know, we're taught to put ourselves first because that way we have more to contribute to others. But we're also still raised with the, you know, put others first. How do you begin to turn that around? How do you begin to start loving yourself? Because I do think that's the critical step before you can move forward.
No, absolutely. And it really is, Vicki, it's a journey. And it's not something that you wake up someday and you're like, I've arrived at the land of self-love. I now completely love myself. I'm done with this. It is something that you continue to do, and it gets deeper and deeper. I think the first step is to really know yourself, to know who you are outside of society, what your parents say, what your partner may say. You really have to know who you are, because you can't love you if you don't know who she is.
Now, you work primarily with women and girls, right?
I do work mostly with women and girls, although I have translated the chapters for men as well. They replace the pronoun with a different pronoun.
Yeah. And I know that your work is trying to get people to be their best selves, to be their truest, authentic selves. And you talk about this in the book. We've all known people maybe, you know, somebody listening is one of those people. And it's not just women, it's men as well. But they seem very independent, very self-sufficient, very in charge of their own lives. And then they hook up with someone and all we hear is, oh, Chris says, Chris doesn't like this, Chris wants this, Chris believes, Chris doesn't think I should go there. What happens?
Well, you know, this is the conversation of self-love that we're not having as women and girls. Self-esteem is actually a great way to mask the fact that you're not loving yourself. So self-esteem will make you appear confident. It will get you a great paycheck. It will get you a great job. But it will not put you into healthy relationships or stop you from self-destructive behaviors.
So how do we stop that?
Well, I call it the five hard truths or the five me vows. And there are five easy steps, which is why most of us have to, you know, have some traumatic thing that happened to us that kind of wake us up. But those five hard truths go back to really know who you are. Number two, be honest with yourself, completely unwaveringly, uncompromisingly honest. Third, you got to love who you are right now and commit to your happiness. Fourth, you have to trust yourself. There's something called your intuition, who's your BFF. We don't listen to her quite enough, and that's the fourth piece of it. And the fifth piece is honoring yourself, and that means only putting yourself into situations that respect you, that give you the same type of love you have for yourself.
Chapter three is called Loving Me. Do I really love me, all of her? What does that mean?
Well, it took me a year to forgive my ex-person. It took me 7 years to forgive myself. And so we all have pieces of ourselves that we're ashamed of or we don't feel great about. And when we look at them, you know, they're not the pretty parts of us, but they are who we are. And the more we can love all of us, so the pieces that aren't so beautiful or pretty, that aren't our best characteristics, the more we can take them out of the shadow and into the light and actually, you know, give her a big hug and love all of us.
Mm. Now, I know you're happily remarried and you actually met somebody very quickly, didn't you? After you were surprised how quickly you met somebody.
I was not looking and he serendipitously showed up on my doorstep.
And I know you're happily remarried now, but with your ex-person, as you call him, why did you blame yourself for so long?
Well, because truthfully, you know, the way he ended the relationship was very dramatic and probably, you know, a little bit unnecessary to do it right before the engagement party. Mm-hmm. However, I put myself in that situation. I knew he didn't want to get married, and I pressured him to get married. I didn't really care what he wanted. I only cared what I wanted. And I think a lot of women, especially women who are used to getting what they want, have a lot of self-esteem. Or, you know, women like who I was back then, I was afraid to be alone. So the thought of being alone versus being with someone that didn't make me quite happy was an easier reality to swallow.
Yeah. You talk in the book of how you changed your name. Now, I want to just talk about that and the significance of what that meant to you. It was quite symbolic, I'm guessing.
It was. You know, I joked that I, you know, ran away to San Francisco and all my relatives thought I lost my mind.
hey, I ran to Seattle.
Kind of wacky out here on the West Coast, right, in the Pacific Northwest. But really, it wasn't. I found myself and I moved to a city where, you know, you can change your name and people think that it's, you know, the totally normal. And for me, I had for so long been living to fit into an image of what I was supposed to be, rising marketing executive, MBA, professional woman, you know, getting married, get the house, get the kid, do that whole thing. And it wasn't really me. And when I moved to San Francisco, I knew I was going to find a name. I just didn't expect it to come from an 8-year-old boy who was visiting my neighbor. when I went to go get a cup of sugar, I came back with a new last name.
Mm. And you kept it because why? What did that do for you? I'm asking because we went on a very similar journey. I actually changed my name too. I was told I could keep my husband's name when I applied for a new passport. I could keep my husband's name or I could take my father's name. I had to have a man's name in this day and age.
It's true. And, you know, when I got married is actually when I legally changed my name. And my husband's like, well, you know, I don't care what you do. Just change your name once. And I'm like, well, I don't want your name because that's your name. I don't really like the last name I was born with. Never fit. And so I chose this name. And it was interesting. Changing your name is a big deal. And I didn't think I really got that until I went through it. It really felt like coming home. Mm. It felt like a deeper sense of really knowing me, of fitting into who I was.
Yeah.
And there are relatives that still think I'm crazy, but that's part of it. I mean, part of loving yourself is never apologizing for who you are.
No, it's stepping into who you feel you are, I think. My big beef was that I was told I had to have a man's name when I was changing my passport, and I had a major fight with the British passport, the embassy in Washington, D.C., because I've been a career woman all of my life, and they're telling me I have to take a man's name. So...
Good for you, Vicky. We have to buck the system. This is the thing. This is another reason why I wrote the book, because I, you know, for the first 30 years of my life, I was going along just living the way everyone else around me was living.
Yeah.
And I didn't get that there were all these other options out there. And so I wrote the book as a way to give women different thoughts and perspectives and ideas to say, hey, you don't have to do it like your mother, your friends, your aunt, you know.
Yeah.
Follow your own heart.
Yeah. And I have to say, I do not hate men. I'm not a man hater. My two best friends are men. I love men. So it had nothing to do with that. It's stepping into who you feel you are.
Absolutely. Men are wonderful. I mean, that's, you know, people often ask me, well, is this an anti-man book? I'm like, no, it's just the opposite.
No.
I think it's really easy for us to blame the people we're with, you know, the men in our lives, for our problems. And a lot of women become what I call, I was this person, the queen of fixers. And we get all fixated on fixing our men versus actually looking in the mirror and looking at ourselves.
Now, I want to ask you, you describe yourself as a recovering achievement junkie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, let's look at that and how you encourage women to get over that and find balance in their life. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Christine Arilo. She's dedicated her work to inspiring women to break free from limiting self-images. Stay with us.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967 because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
Do you have legal questions, need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick & Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Tuesday and Thursday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
Commune with the Pop Oracle on the Radio 8 Ball Show. I'm Andras Jones, the host of the Radio 8 Ball Show, where we answer your questions by picking songs at random and interpreting them as the answers, like picking musical tarot cards. That's the Radio 8 Ball Show on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Don't miss the Radio 8 Ball Show, Fridays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150.
Alternative Talk 1150 is on the interwebs. Dial us up at 1150kknw.com.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live. I'm Vicky St. Clair, and my guest in this segment is Christine Arilo. And her new book is called Choosing Me Before We, Every Woman's Guide to Life and Love. And we're talking in the break about how our society puts so much pressure on us to get to the next step. Always you find a boyfriend, then it's when you're getting married, when you're married, when you're having kids, and blah, blah, blah. Let's talk a little bit about, you describe yourself as a recovering achievement junkie. How do you encourage people to be present, to stop that cycle of, you know, I got to get to the next level all the time?
Well, thanks. First of all, it's recognizing that you are an achievement junkie, that, you know, this type A trying to do it all woman is deeply ingrained in a lot of our behaviors, and that it's almost a palpable feeling that you can feel that you never actually stop to celebrate where you are. And so what I do a lot with women is I point out some of the what I call achievement junkie behaviors, one of which is the killer C, or otherwise known as comparison. And it's when you're always comparing yourself to other people and saying, well, why do I don't have that, or I haven't done that, and they've done this. And you're always, you know, kind of putting yourself down based on where other people have gotten to, as if you're not enough for where you already are. Or my brand of the killer C is often I'm comparing myself to my future self. So I should already be, you know, this, or I should already have achieved this, and why haven't I? And then I, you know, basically beat myself up for it.
Yeah.
And that's achievement junkie behavior. And it's almost like you literally can't stop yourself from doing it. So the first step is to be aware of it and then work on actually choosing better behaviors that are much more in line with loving yourself.
Mm-hmm. And being aware of it is a huge part of that, isn't it?
It is. I think, you know, for the first 30 years of my life, I didn't even know what was really motivating me. I was just going along on what I call the escalator to death, which is basically the linear path of life where we always have to get to the next thing at some certain timetable. So you go to college, you get a job, you get married, you have kids, you buy a house, you work at a job, maybe you like, you retire and you die. And we're always, you know, trying to get into that next thing. And that's like living on the escalator to death. You wake up one day and you're like, oh my God, did I even live the life that I really wanted to live, or did my life live me?
So jump off that escalator real quick, right?
Get off the escalator to death. Well, and the scary thing is, like, we're just following everybody else. We're like robots. We're robots on the escalator to death. And the way off of it is really self-awareness, to stop and ask yourself, is this the life I want? What makes me happy? Mm. Why am I here? What are my gifts? What are my skills? What are my strengths?
You talk a lot about the truth, finding the truth, being honest with yourself. And I want to ask you, what are the biggest lies that women tell themselves about relationships?
Mm. Well, you are talking to the former queen of illusion, and so I'm
Oh, we've all been there.
I often say we create the relationship that we want in our head versus the one that we're actually having. And I think one of the biggest ones that we have is, I can fix him, he'll change for me. And the truth of the matter is that he can only change for himself. People change because they want to. And if you're with a person or you're marrying a person because of his potential, bad idea. You have to love the person who you're with and accept that person for who they are right now, just as you have to accept yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And they deserve to be loved for who they are, not for who you think they could be.
Yeah, I mean, they don't need you to be their therapist.
Right.
And, you know, I think it's also just who do we think we are, that we have all the answers about someone else maybe. It's a very convenient distraction from actually fixing yourself.
Yeah. And there's actually psychological truth to the statement that love is blind. I mean, we do, with all those hormones going on, we do kind of tune out some of those truths that if we weren't quite so involved at that point, that we probably wouldn't tolerate.
Well, absolutely. And that's why self-love is so important, Vicki, because when you actually love yourself and you demand that every relationship that you are in treats you with that same kind of love and respect, you will never settle for anything less than that.
So what advice do you give to people who are looking for Mr. Right? What do you find works?
I tell them to stop looking outside and start looking inside, that a great he and a great we is going to come from a great me. And I talk to them about a couple questions that are really meant to get them off the escalator to death. And the first one is, get real about your motivations. Why do you want a partner in your life in the first place? We don't have to be in a relationship. I think we have a belief as a society that you have to be in a relationship. There's something wrong with you. And so you really need to be clear about why you want a partner. And then I think you really need to look at yourself and clean out your me closet. Get rid of anything that's keeping a great guy from coming in. Like attracts like. So we will attract the relationship and the he that reflects our me. Our relationships are a direct reflection of ourself.
Mm.
And then the third question I often ask is, you know, get clear on the partner that you want. Actually, you know, who is this person? Not the man list, not like a laundry list of qualities, but at his essence, who is this person? And actually, in the book, I have a whole chapter called He, which I take women and men, because you can change the pronoun, through what I call the core four. and painting the Picasso of the person you want versus all the qualities he must measure up to.
Yeah. And let's look at a high level at the core four.
Well, the core four is like building a giant man magnet, or another way to put it is... Well, that's the thing. There are all these beliefs. You have to go out there and, find and hunt down this person. And the truth of the matter is if you're good with you and you know what you want, that's how it will show up in your doorstep. It's exactly how it worked. Why I found someone just several months after my ex person departed.
Because you had a good man magnet.
Yeah, I mean, I had been saying for years what I wanted out of a partner to this person I was with, and he kept saying I'm not that person, but I'd never listened to him. So I was trying to make the man I was with the partner I wanted, and the truth was he could never be that person.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew what I wanted. And so the core four really, it uses the power of intention, focus, that's why there's four. And then it uses the whole idea of the law of attraction and manifesting. It's like, got to get the energy, got to get the juju going. So don't say, I want a guy who's nice and kind and has a great pocketbook, because in today's economy, a great pocketbook is probably not going to be the same value it was a couple months ago, and really get into the essence of who that person is.
Sounds
one of my core four was I wanted a man who would stand on rooftops and sing out loud how much he loved me.
And does your husband do that?
He actually does. I don't think I meant it literally, but he does walk down the streets of San Francisco singing I Love Christine.
Mm.
But for me, it was really, I wanted someone who could really see me. And I think that's what a lot of women want. We really want partners. And I think men, too. We want someone who really sees us, like deep in our soul, who we are.
Right.
And I wanted somebody that could be zany and also secure enough in himself to do something as crazy as sing from a rooftop. So the way that I expressed that was in a very, Picasso-like way versus what I call the PowerPoint version of a core four, which isn't going to really do you any good.
Now, I want to go back to something you mentioned a little earlier, and that is that society puts us under a lot of pressure to be in a relationship, and some people choose to be single,
mm-hmm.
short-term, long-term, for whatever reason, that's their business. How do you advise them to cope with that? The one thing that always bugged me is when you're married, nobody comes up and says, so how's your sex life? The minute you're single, everybody wants to know how your sex life is.
Well, then there's all kinds of judgment about what your sex life should be or couldn't be. And, what I advise people is this is the thing. You have to live your life for you. And there's always going to be people that are going to be telling you how you should live your life. We have a whole society built on what, you're supposed to do. You cannot live your life for anyone else but yourself. And that's why knowing yourself and being honest with yourself and trusting your own intuition versus what anyone else has to say is going to just, that's what's going to get you the life you want. And so whenever people have opinions, they're going to bounce right off of you.
Mm. I want to thank you for being with us today. We're almost at the end of this segment. What would you like to leave our listeners with today, Christine?
I would like to leave the listeners with just this one simple thought. Never apologize for who you are and live that person 158,000,000%. I think that we all in this lifetime, it's a great gift, and we all have unique gifts and talents to bring, and we all deserve to have the lives that our souls and our hearts desire, whether that's the relationship we have, the career, anything. Just go for it.
Sounds good. And going back to that question I just asked you about, how's your sex life? I always used to redirect the question back to them. I found that worked really well. They'd either go red and giggle and shut up.
Yeah, I think that's a really good, shut them up fast. Good for you, Vicky.
So let's give out your website. I know you have a couple of different websites.
Yeah, you can go to www.mebeforewe.com. And then I also have a website, which is www.madlyinlovewithme.com, where you can actually download an entire kit that has all kinds of great ideas on how to have a me love affair and you fall even more in love with yourself for the rest of your life.
Well, that sounds good. And I thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me on, Vicky. It's been great.
Sure. And my guest, of course, was Christine Arylo. I'll spell her last name. It's A-R-Y-L-O, Christine Arylo. And she's dedicated her work to inspiring women all over the world to break free from limiting self-images. Her book, again, Choosing Me Before We, Every Woman's Guide to Life and Love. And before we go today, a couple of quick things. I wanted to just let you know that Lorraine Howell was a guest on our show in January. She's a former television producer and media skills training expert. You might remember her. The podcast is actually on our website, conversationslive.net. And she's offering personalized classes for people who need to boost their networking and conversational skills. You know, when someone asks you, what do? How do you answer? If you want to stand out in the crowd and have people remember you, when you're networking, you must have a great opening line. And that's what Lorraine focuses on, getting you to that next conversation. I attended one of her workshops. They're limited to just four people. They're half-day sessions. They're very, very intimate, very focused on your specific needs. And I know that Lorraine really knows her stuff. And she's not happy with the outcome until you're happy with your elevator speech. So you can find out more about that at mediaskillstraining.com. And next week, we are talking with novelist Diane Hammond. She actually worked with, and I have to ask Eric, was it Kiko or Keiko the whale? Kiko? Get your mic quick.
You know, I'm not sure. I think it's Kiko.
I think it's Kiko too. But she actually worked with Kiko the whale and thought her next novel would be about Kiko, but it wasn't. It was about a man who loved two things, his wife and his elephant. And we'll talk to her about her new book called Hannah's Dream, and that's coming up next week. Until then, live well, live strong. Thank you so much for being with us today. See you next week.
Coming March 9th on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, Dr. Judith Orloff discusses the power of emotional freedom. Imagine yourself running late and stuck in a traffic jam. Instead of getting tense and irritated, you remain peaceful and calm. Or imagine your boss demanding that it's his way or the highway. Instead of feeling intimidated or angry, you feel compassion. A board-certified psychiatrist, Dr. Orloff helps thousands of people transform negative emotions by synthesizing traditional medicine with intuition, energy, and spirituality. Her work has been featured in O Magazine, Self, Cosmo, and she's been a regular on The Today Show, CBS Early Show, and CNN. Tune in Monday, March 9th at noon for The Power of Emotional Freedom on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for guest schedule.
Views expressed on the preceding program are those of